Welcome to the IGIS Institute Sounds of Safety podcast, where our community will be delving into a series of critical issues supporting the public sector mission space. Today, our guests will continue to explore emerging and disruptive technologies in justice and public safety. We're thrilled to welcome back Larry Zorio, chair of the Cybersecurity Working Group, and Paul Wormley, who spearheads efforts for the IGIS Technology and Architecture Committee. In this episode, Larry and Paul will dive into the transformative potential of agentic artificial intelligence within justice and public safety operations. They'll explore how the cutting-edge technology can streamline processes, enhance efficiency, and empower professionals to be more productive. Now let's hand it over to Larry and Paul for more.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of IGIS's Sound of Safety podcast. This is our Tech Talk. This is Larry Zorio, and I am here with Paul Wormley. And today, we're going to be talking about agentic AI. And you might be thinking, what is agentic AI? So we're going to get into all that. Paul is very well versed on this. We're going to get into what it is, some use cases for it, how you can use it in your agency or organization, and even just how to get started with it as well. So Paul, welcome. Nice to see you again.
Thank you, Larry. Thanks for convening this meeting. It's a good topic for us to be talking about.
It really is. The thing with agentic AI is it has been around for a while, but for whatever reason, this buzzword is starting to percolate a little bit more and people are starting to talk about it. We're starting to see some of the more popular, even like the GPTs or the AI chat bots that you see that are popular, you're starting to see them also offer it. And that's probably why people are starting to ask about it and talk about it. So I think it's great timing for us to get into this today. I think we're going to be providing a lot of value, Paul. So I'm going to play, let's call it, well, really the host, and I'm going to be asking you a lot of questions because you're very educated on this, and we'll just do a little back and forth. But I think it's most important just for people who are maybe just tuning in and maybe don't know what agentic AI is. Paul, would you mind explaining to folks what it is?
Sure. Of course, Larry, you know as much about it this as I do. So
okay. All right.
We'll do this as a team.
Sounds good. I like that.
I think the first thing that people ought to know is that agentic AI is really the next big thing in AI. We've all been sitting around the last couple of years being curious and experimenting with things like ChatGPT and all the generative AI, and that's kind of got everybody's attention. But a lot of that is just fun and interesting and maybe somewhat useful, and we can invent images of a three-fingered sloth climbing a tree or whatever. Is it really useful? What does it do for us? And I think what has got people's attention now is that the whole reason we're really interested in AI is we want it to do something. And what agentic yes. AI at the root of it is a use of AI that actually does work for you, improves your productivity, gives you a way to get out of doing perhaps what you might have considered to be grunge work and do it for you and let you supervise AI as opposed to doing just a knowledge search. We can do a lot of those knowledge searches with generative AI, but this is getting the work done. So technically, if you really want to define the difference between agentic AI and what we've been used to in the press, there's four things that agentic AI really has to do to be called an agent of AI. First of all, it has to have the ability to perceive the data by collecting data from sensors or data inputs. Secondly, it has to have the ability to reason, the capacity to draw information out and draw in inferences and make decisions, actually. Third, it has to be able to plan strategies and figure out what do I do about this data that I've analyzed. And finally, it has to have the ability to take action. The most common interesting example that's used, you'll see this in a lot of the press articles, is I want this tool to go out and plan my vacation to Australia. I want to go to Sydney and
here's my budget. I'm traveling with this many people.
Yeah.
Go make an itinerary.
And then reserve the flight for me on my favorite airline in first class. And it's going to be me and my wife. And and we want to spend 14 days, and here's where we want to go, and I want to go scuba diving on the Great Barrier Reef. And
do it on a budget, Paul. I want to do that all for $5,000 or under. Make it happen, GPT. Make it happen.
That's an agent. That's an AI yeah. agent. Mm. It does reasoning. It does planning. It takes action. Well, what does this mean in the justice and public safety world?
Mm. Before you get there, I did have some follow-up questions for you. With us now relying on this more and more, you joked around the three-toed sloth, right? Like making a picture of it. I recently did a presentation, and we talk a lot about CGIS, and there's a lot of requirements around CGIS. And I asked one of these AI agents, I said, all right, I want you to create me a picture of a police agency that is overwhelmed with requirements and compliance. And it created this picture for me, and it looked great, right? It was these police officers that were like drowning in paperwork. And I'm like, oh, perfect. So I threw it in my slide. I'm going to do a presentation at work. And somebody in the audience goes, hey, Larry, you know that one of these people has six fingers, right? I zoomed in, and one of the people in the crowd had six fingers. So first and foremost, you got to remember to treat this like it is an assistant, and you certainly need to review its output. So that's more of just a funny story, but I do have a question around, this actually sounds similar to robotic process automation. These bots that were like in vogue, let's call it 10 years ago. What is the difference between the two? What sets agentic AI apart from RPA?
Really nothing, because conceptually they're the same thing. We're just talking about doing it in software instead of hardware. Robotic automation, we've automated the auto industry, as you know, but over the years we put robots in to do the work, the repetitive work in making a car, and we're talking about the same kind of thing. In that case, the robotic automation is they still have the ability to gather information, to perceive things, to reason, to make choices depending on what the sensors tell them.
Yep.
In the robotic case, it's going to be more hardwired than what we're talking about here generally.
I do think that there are some other differences too, though. There is like some software RPA as well. And I think some of the things that you pointed out that are different, like I don't think RPA can do reasoning. Like RPA was set up to do like just mundane tasks, like you move this data point to this field. Like I would rather automate that instead of me manually doing it. With this, you're getting some reasoning. And the other big one is it's learning, right? I don't believe RPA was able to learn. Maybe it was. But yeah, that's just some nuances for people who may be thinking, well, this feels like it's been around for a while. I think some of it has, but with AI, you kind of have that intelligence side of it. It could make it a lot better than what's been out there in the past. So
you're absolutely right.
Yeah. So let's talk about the justice of public safety space. Like, what might be some use cases? You were kind of going to go down that path, and I interrupted you. So
I'm thinking more in general about the fact that law enforcement and the administration of justice is a very labor-intensive enterprise. We know that. And whenever you have a labor-intensive enterprise, there's a yearning for figuring out how to do things more efficiently and quicker and with less manpower, womanpower. So we're hopeful that AI can be used to do some of these tasks that we can't otherwise do. And of course, one of the big problems we have in the whole justice world and law enforcement today is we can't hire enough people to fill the jobs. The law enforcement, as you know, is 10% down all over the country. Mm-hmm. So there's a big hope that taking some work that can be done with AI off our back so that we can spend the time in more useful pursuits. So we look for those things where we can automate certain tasks. You break down the work processes of a law enforcement agency or a prosecutor or courts. What can be done without having to spend a lot of human energy to do the work, but yet does no harm to the process? So some examples of things that you can talk about. One of the ones I read about not too long ago is, if you look at this use case of shot spotters, for example, in the police world. People that have employed ShotSpotter to detect the shot being fired are delighted with the fact that the police can find that immediately and dispatch somebody to go find out what's going on. But
sure.
You could think about an application using an agent, an AI agent, that would, first of all, detect the shot, as they can do now, immediately swivel the cameras in the vicinity on that spot. Something could do some of that now. But then go further and say, okay, who is the closest available unit, and automatically dispatch someone even before you get on the microphone to them. And that's to minimize the time it takes to go respond to that.
I mean, that use case alone is very, very powerful, what you just explained.
It's just, it's really, you know, you're saving not only work, but doing, for saving time and increasing public safety. And it's, but even you go then to look at things like emergency response in general. What if you're on the phone and someone calls in and says, I just had a big crash. There's a car in front of my house and the car hit a telephone pole and it's burning and there's two people laying in the street with head injuries. And what if you could have an agent that would evaluate that input instantly and immediately dispatch police, fire, and EMS without any human intervention to take the closest available unit and get there now to save that life.
Yeah, because minutes and seconds are very important.
Right.
And shaving off 4 minutes would be huge.
And then the AI agent could also actually monitor those vehicles on their way and direct them on the fastest possible route, depending on current traffic conditions and congestion. It can perceive the problem, analyze the data, make reason what needs to be done about it, and act on it all in one app.
That's another good one. Another one that comes to mind is just with digital evidence, the management of that evidence, taking different data points from whether it's video or audio or even just some records, right? And you just link it all up and it's analyzing all that for you. And a lot of it today is done by humans. Now we use technology to help link it together, but there still is a lot of manual effort involved in managing that evidence and analyzing it. And if you could, you know, have AI do that, yeah.
That's probably one of the most important applications that I can think of, because digital evidence in particular has grown to be such an enormous task with the advent of body-worn cameras and drone evidence. And
sure. The license plate readers and
everything
all that.
Everything has to be come together. And just think about the pure assistant district attorney who gets that case and has to look at all the multimedia digital evidence and tie it together with the police reports and the witness statements and the defense attorney's filings and make the case out of it, where you could have an agent, an AI agent, that assembles it all, not only assembles it, Larry, but then looks at all the evidence and says, which pieces of this evidence is important to prove the particular charges that we're trying to take to court, and actually comes up then with a recommendation for the prosecutorial strategy.
Do you know what I love about that one is there is this fear that AI is going to steal my job, right? AI is going to enrich your job. You need to treat AI like it is an intern. This is an internship, and the AI is part of that internship, or the research assistant. You think of AI as being that research assistant. Think about how much more you would get done, how much more of an impact you would make if you could just assign an agent to do, quote unquote, the grunt work for you and do that analysis. Yeah. And then, Paul, produce to you the final report or their top three findings that you should start with. And these are the first three areas that you should go investigate. It's beautiful.
Another big area that there's a lot of research going on is this whole issue of risk analysis. Whether it's the probation department doing a pre-sentence investigation or the judge wanting to have some idea of what, you know, what's the likelihood of different sanctions that could be applied to a particular inmate based on their history. But you're looking at all the factors that go into that play of what kind of sentencing could be done. Doing an assessment of the risk to the community to decide things like release on own recognizance, to decide whether or not the person has to be retained in custody, as taking all the factors into account instantly and right at the time of you're making that decision in the courtroom, as opposed to having to go out and collect data and pull it all together, search every bit of evidence relevant to the risk that that person's going to be a danger to society and make a recommendation right there on the spot, not without human input and control and oversight, but doing that work of gathering all the data and putting together past behaviors, criminal histories, and all that stuff, make it happen.
Yeah.
And deciding, similarly, to take that a little bit further into laying out a plan for reducing the probability of recidivism on a personalized basis for someone getting out of prison, going on parole. You know, what's the best path? And all the things that have to be done by not just law enforcement, but social services and medical services to keep that person from becoming a risk again.
Well, that one's interesting, right? Because with the example you opened up with that you see in the news articles around Plan My Vacation, you could do the same thing when someone goes on parole. Like, all right, plan the next first 30 days of this person going on parole, right? Like, who do they need to meet with? Like, let's build them a plan that is specific for this person. Like, yeah, that could be really interesting.
One more one that's close to your heart, I know, and that's the whole field of cybersecurity is ripe for AI agents.
Oh, sure.
You know, to have that instantaneous response to attacks, learning the patterns of attacks, and learning, of course, as you know, is critically important as new threats occur every hour, every minute of the day, and autonomously defending systems against intrusions without having to have human intervention whatsoever.
Oh, be beautiful. To your point around retention issues at these agencies or your organization, you know, recruiting, cybersecurity is very difficult to find. Very difficult to find individuals to work in that field. And if you could automate, especially some of the investigation work, that would be incredible. Absolutely incredible. So let's talk about just overall benefits. So we gave use cases, right? But I've heard a lot of themes in some of the examples that you gave, right? I've heard definitely increased efficiency, both, I think, in process, the human themselves is going to get more efficient. Processes internally in your organization or the agency are going to get more efficient. What are some other ones that come to mind for you?
Well, a big one is the improved effectiveness of that work, because once the AI agent, in many cases, is more effective than a very short human attention to a problem, because the AI can investigate millions of routes through the decision making, you know, in seconds that humans just can't cope with at all. So the idea is that with the evaluation of a very much larger set of alternative actions, it's much more likely you can find the correct action faster with AI, which means you're going to do a more effective job. So you're going to not only improve efficiency, you're going to improve effectiveness of the outcomes with
it. Yeah, just the overall quality. Yeah.
Another big factor is truly a substantial cost savings by cutting down the cost of doing the repetitive tasks that are doing over and over again. You know, even hiring junior people to do tasks becomes expensive. Then it allows you to optimize resource allocation in real time, and that lowers your risk and improves your capabilities. What this all contributes to, in my mind, is enhanced public safety.
Sure.
It allows you to take a more preventive approach to things as opposed to a reactive approach. You can also reduce the elements of bias in decision-making without using the designed agents.
Yeah, that's the important part, right? Properly designed, right? I love that you ended with, it's just going to enhance safety, right? Because ultimately, everything we've talked about boils up to that. This is to better protect and serve, right? You're going to be able to serve the public and protect them a lot more efficiently. We're, you know, thinking about costs, and it's going to be better quality and all that. So, yeah, that was a very good way to sum it up there.
Well, and a lot of people have come to the conclusion that it's far, far better for us to think about both law enforcement and justice agency work as being proactive instead of reactive.
Absolutely.
The use of AI agents helps us move to that more ideal way. It's a lot cheaper and more effective to prevent crime than it is to respond to it.
Mm. And even take that a step further, a lot of this can be personalized.
Right.
It's tough to, in some cases today, to personalize things because it takes too long, it's just too much effort. But the more data that you can use and put with this tool, the more personalized you're going to be able to get, whether it's that the inmate example we gave, or maybe it's a detective and you know how the detective likes their reports to be given to them, or maybe you understand that they've been working many hours, so you kind of deliver it in a different way to them. It's just, you can personalize in so many different areas using these AI technologies. So that's very interesting. All right. So you did talk about how it can reduce bias, but as long as the model is built the right way, I think that's one of the concerns or fears that people do have with AI is that bias. And there are certainly other ones too. Like, we shouldn't think that everything is rainbows and butterflies. When you roll in AI, there's definitely considerations that need to be made, and there will be some challenges. What are some of those challenges if people are listening to this and they're thinking, ooh, I think I actually want to start exploring this and maybe roll it out? Them doing kind of their own risk analysis and thinking about some of the challenges, what come to mind?
You're absolutely right when you talk about it in that way, that what we're concerned about is making these tools trustworthy.
Mm-hmm.
And that's got to be the objective, is to make them trustworthy, which means you have to reduce the risks of the kind of errors that we've read about and hallucinations and that sort of thing. And really, I'm more and more convinced that the way to do that is for these tools to be embedded in good, well-designed records management or case management systems. Because in your records management system, you've already dealt with issues of security and privacy. You've already dealt with the fact that you have to have the authentication and authorization of access to the tool. And it's not something that can just be out in the wild, so to speak. And
right.
You've already dealt with the fact that people have to have role-based authorization to see certain data. And you've already dealt with the security protections and implementing zero trust architecture and those kinds of things. So if you embed these tools in a well-designed records or case management system, you're ahead of the game to start with. But still, there's a good reason why law enforcement employs field training officers, FTOs. Every new recruit goes out on patrol with an FTO in the car. And why do they do that? It's because you can't necessarily trust the judgment of a new recruit. Nope, this is the same kind of issue here. You can't trust the judgment of these AI tools, no matter how good they may be designed, until they're deployed in the field. And they have to be supervised, just like you would a new recruit.
Absolutely.
And you have to say that, you know, test them. I think the smart agency will really pay attention to the fact that these devices shouldn't be released to the public in any unconstrained way. Mm-hmm. They have to be tools that the law enforcement officer or the prosecutor uses in their work and really is an assistant to that work, not something that's just thrown out there to be some show off for the public. They're like, oh, hey, I got AI. Aren't we smart?
You know? I hope not. Yeah, no, you don't want to go down this road just to show off. Too many challenges and risks if that's the only thing that's motivating you. Yeah.
And as long as you start talking about that from a risk management standpoint, the advice of the NIST guidelines for minimizing errors and improving trustworthiness is to make sure that the decision making in the algorithms that are used are transparent and explainable. So, you know, if you use things like cloud native applications where you're taking advantage of microservices and you know exactly what's going on and how the decisions are made, that makes people more comfortable.
Mm-hmm.
The issue of bias in these algorithms is almost always caused by the bias that's contained in the source data. So if you build these tools with a constraint about the kinds of language that you use and where it comes from, I'm not talking about using the generic large language models of all the words in the world, but for example, using a knowledge graph that is built with an ontology that comes from an established standard like NEEM.
Yes, a standard.
You know,
yes.
So you have a standard for the language that's being used, and you limit the data to the authorized, evaluated, and managed data that comes into these algorithms from the actual law enforcement and justice work, not just from raw data floating around in the cloud somewhere. But we have to also be tuned to the fact that there will be potential privacy violations that have to be evaluated. We don't need to do more harm by using these tools than we already do by violating privacy, where that becomes a problem, particularly with faulty data. So that has to be evaluated. And then my favorite concern, Larry, that I say over and over again is that anything like this has to be subject to a proper role of a governance structure.
Sure.
Which means all the stakeholders have to have a voice before you decide to roll out one of these fancy tools. You have to be sure that you're following the legal and regulatory frameworks that are in existence in your state and your country, for that matter. You have to be sure that you're establishing accountability for any decisions that come out of these tools, so people know someone is responsible for the accuracy and control over these things. And the public has to have a voice to accept what you're doing and trust what you're doing.
I think it's important when you're talking to the public, it's all about communication. You need to communicate. You probably need to over-communicate with what you plan to do. And think about it from their point of view. What is the benefit to them? Well, the benefits to them is you're going to better protect them. You're going to better serve them. Right. You're going to respond faster to their calls. Like, think of it that way. That's what you need to deliver. I would say, don't just tell the public we're doing this because we want to be more efficient. No, you got to go a lot deeper than that, because people do worry about this. The public worries about privacy. I mean, I worry about privacy. I worry about myself. I worry about my kids. So you don't want them to have a feeling of big brother. What you do want them to have a feeling of is, we are doing this to protect you, to serve you better.
You're absolutely right. And the metrics that you choose are very important. And the metrics have to be based on outcomes, not outputs. Something that you're really doing for people to improve the value contribution you're making to their lives, like responding faster to calls, you're handling more calls, you're doing that perhaps with less labor, so you're saving them money. Every voter wants to know you're saving money, but you're also doing a better job and performing your mission more effectively, and having metrics that can show that is the best way to convince the public.
On average, last year, it took us 10 minutes to arrive on a scene. After enabling these features, we now are on a scene within 4 minutes, right? That's what the public wants to see.
Yeah.
That's right. It. Yeah.
You're right.
All right. So we're getting close to time here, and there's still a lot more to cover. How would one start this, Paul? Like, what would you recommend are some actions that agencies should take if they do want to explore agentic AI?
First of all, I think everybody should be exploring it right now, because it's coming upon us, because there are companies out there building the tools, building these apps, and you need to know what's coming and need to know what you should evaluate and choose to deploy or not. Mm-hmm. So the first step is some knowledge development, to review the literature, read what's happening in the industry, and maybe talk with your service provider about what some applications are of this technology to your enterprise.
Yeah,
and not just try to wing this on your own.
I would say even explore a bit on the personal side too. I know many of us are using ChatGPT, there's Gronk, there's Gemini, like we're all using these, even Copilot, like many of them are starting to offer these agents. So just explore it on your own. Like Paul said, perfect example. I asked GPT a couple weeks ago, I said, I have a budget of $350 a week for food shopping. Here is the grocery store that I go to in this town. I have a family of four to feed. Build me a grocery list. And that can be like the start of doing this. And then you could take it a step further and you could say, all right, now go order me the groceries, right? But I would say that's another piece of it around learning more, is start just testing it out personally and see how it works.
The second thing then is to look at the process, to break down the processes of your work, whether you're in law enforcement or prosecution or courts, and think about which processes are repetitive and could be done by somebody other than you. What if you had an assistant to do that work for you? And try to break down the work processes to those specific tasks that would be really nice if you had an automated agent to handle them for you. Like the examples that we've been talking about.
Yes. And I would say put together your list and then sort it by, I'd almost say like complexity. Yeah. Whenever you're rolling out something new, especially with something like this, you want to get some small, quick wins. So don't have the first agent you roll out be like 15 steps. Have the first agent be one or two steps.
Yeah.
Prove it out, right? Something simple that you can show off to other people in your agency or company organization, and they can kind of get it, right, with something simple.
And in order to do that, and I totally agree with you, Larry, you can look at some of these tool sets that are out there. Microsoft has in Copilot, there's a studio function that allows you to create agentic AI. Google Cloud has something they call Vertex AI Agent Builder. You don't have to be an IT guru to use these tools. The new thing is low code or no code development. That's what they're trying to do with these things. Mm-hmm. They could do those simple tasks one at a time. And there's a half a dozen other startups that are building these tools to let you develop your own agents.
Yes.
But you can also, again, talk to your service provider and say, hey, you know, Larry, I know you guys gave us a great records management system, but how about if you automate this test for me? You know, yeah. See what they'll do.
Sure. I mean, we would love to hear that from a customer. We would love to, because, you know, it's challenges. And I'm sure every tech company would love to hear that, right? Like, oh, okay, this is interesting. Yeah, let's solve this together.
Finally, the most important thing is to have very tightly controlled implementation. Start with small scale pilot projects to evaluate these tools, test them, make sure you've built the ethical guidelines, make sure that you've got the partnerships in place and you're engaged with all the stakeholders to build trust on it before you roll it out. Mm-hmm. And then prove its effectiveness and supervise them like you have a field training officer supervising the patrol car. Supervise them for 6 months or whatever until you're damn sure that they're really doing exactly what you said they were.
Yeah.
And they're being helpful. Mm-hmm. And generate those metrics we just talked about, Larry, so you can be able to show the public that, yes, you are getting an ROI from this investment.
Yes. I think stakeholder engagement is so, so, so important. I would say probably you want to start with something internal at first that isn't necessarily going to impact the public. So maybe there's some internal processes. I would definitely start there. Then at that point, you don't necessarily have to include the public as a stakeholder. But once you start rolling out, you know, the example that Paul gave around how there's a traffic accident down the street and someone's hurt and this thing's going to go send a police officer, an EMT, and fire rescue there. Like, that is involving the public. So when you get to that stage, definitely involve the community. Maybe have them test it with you, get their feedback. Feedback is huge when it comes to building these. So
the last thing I'll say about this is don't ignore this work. You may think it sounds too nerdy and it's too difficult and you need to hire somebody else to do it, but that's not the case. When you start reading a little bit about it, you'll find out it's not that impossible to deal with. There are people that can help you. And this is going to have such an unbelievable impact on the whole justice and public safety field. Once we can prove the utility of agentic AI and make it take over some of these functions, we're going to be so much better off and we'll really, truly improve the quality of community safety in this country.
Yeah, and I even look at public safety and just some of like the thought leaders in this space, especially like the commanding officers, like chiefs of police and the deputies at these agencies. Some of the thought leaders are just kind of forward thinking. A lot of them are forward thinking when it comes to technology. So self-serving for you, if you are one of these leaders and I don't know, selfishly, you kind of want to make a name for yourself or your agency, this might be a good challenge to take on. Because I have a feeling if you can figure this out, which you will figure it out, and you can succeed, and maybe you're working with some tech vendors on this, I really think you can make a name for yourself, your agency, your community by jumping into this deep end and getting involved in this technology. So I'll leave it with that. Any last minute thoughts there, Paul, other than you should be doing this, you should be researching it, you should be getting involved with it?
I'll close with one final thought that if you want to learn more and hear more about it, make sure you get in touch with the IGIS Institute, because the new IGIS Institute Center for AI Excellence is going to be a thought leader in this field. And there'll be much more to come from the IGIS Institute as this whole field develops.
Beautiful. All right, everybody. Until next time, we hope you enjoyed this talk on agentic AI. And until next time, bye, everybody.
Thank you for tuning into today's episode of the Sounds of Safety podcast. Be sure to stay connected with the IGIS Institute on LinkedIn and X, and don't forget to subscribe on Apple Music, Spotify, or your preferred podcast platform to catch future episodes. From cybersecurity to artificial intelligence and deep dives into critical national data sharing initiatives, the Sounds of Safety podcast has you covered. Until next time.